If it feels like no one understands your problems or cares to listen, if it feels like there is no one else in this world who has gone through what you have, if you feel like you're so close to giving up but still holding on, Cafe with Monica was made for you. I'll show you how to deal with the everyday and not so everyday situations that surface in the lives of millennials. By sharing my experiences and knowledge, I hope to inform, inspire, and provide solutions to problems that may seem out of reach. So grab your coffee or drink of choice and let's just talk about it. Welcome to Cafe with Monica. This is episode 19. I am Monica, your host, a millennial helping millennials to hashtag just talk about it over coffee. In this episode, I have a guest and we're going to talk about following your intuition, life coaching, her journey, how she became a life coach, and I hope you stay tuned for the episode. All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. Today, I have Lindsay Preston. She's a wife, a mom of two, and a multi-certified life coach, teacher, and strategist. Her passion is teaching goal-getting, fear-facing women the neuroscience-backed processes for lifelong success. I am so excited to have Lindsay here because she's going to share her story of how she got into coaching and all kind of the bad, the good, and the in-between that happened for her journey. So Lindsay, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Monica. I'm excited.
Yes. So I guess we'll just dive in. Tell me a little bit about your background story. Anything that you want to mention about how you got into coaching?
Yeah, so it goes back to college. I went to Texas Christian University, or TCU, if you don't know. And I happened to just take an intro to psych class. I didn't have a major at the time. I think I was a freshman, maybe even sophomore. I thought I would go in and go for dance, and that didn't pan out the way I thought it would. Mm-hmm. And what happened in that intro to psych class, I loved it so much. It never felt like I was studying. It was just super exciting to me. And I thought, you know, kind of naively that everybody was doing well in the class like I was. And it was in a bigger lecture style kind of hall.
Right.
And then at the very end of the semester, I go and I look at the grades and she had us all up by ID numbers or something. And I remember looking and I thought, oh my gosh, I've made the highest grade in this class. And I thought, like, this, there's something here with this. You know, mm-hmm. I feel passionate about it because, again, it never felt like studying, right? So I knew from there I wanted to be a psych major. And of course, not every class was as exciting as intro to psych. Oh my gosh, there were some really boring ones in there. But then after I graduated at TCU, I thought for sure I was going to go to UNT actually and get a master's in counseling. And so I started pursuing that. But then I just felt the itch to start to make money. And I was getting impatient in life and I just really wanted to kind of be on my own and do my own thing. And so I ended up going into human resources because I was kind of coached in a way or mentored in a way that that would be a good fit for me. And so I happened to get a job there. I worked there a little bit. I started to get really restless again. And so then I started teaching dance on the side. And then I ended up getting a position to own a dance studio full time. And from there, like, life was just starting to happen really fast. At this point, I'm still only like 24. So a lot of life has happened already. I end up getting pregnant with my daughter at 25 and decide to leave HR, leave the dance studio, leave all that behind and become a stay-at-home mom. And so I'm at home with her for about 2 years and my relationship with her father started to fall apart in a very big way, which I'm sure we'll get to in a bit. And from there, after my divorce, I actually started dating again. And somebody I started dating said, hey, what's your Myers-Briggs type?
I love that.
Out of all things. And I was like, oh my gosh, I completely forgot about this world. It was like a piece of me that had been left behind. Mm-hmm. And I retook the test and I found out I was an INFJ, which was very life-changing for me at the time. And I just started getting back into this world of this passion that I had of psychology and all these things. And then, too, I started to hire my own coach because, again, that was something suggested to me to kind mm-hmm. of up-level my life during this time of transition. And I loved the process so much. I loved the way the process I went through was combined with neuroscience, but it still had that action, forward-moving, pace that coaching has. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is the profession I always wanted to be. I just didn't know it existed. And so from there, I went and got certified and blah, blah, blah. The rest is history.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. And I know that's just like the brief summary of how everything kind of came to be. But yeah, you know, so when you were in that intro to psych class, so that was what kind of inspired you to say, okay, I kind of want to figure out people. I kind of want to work with people and, you know, just kind of how they think, how their behaviors and how they learn and how they can succeed. And then you got married. You didn't get married. I'm sorry. I just listened to your podcast. Okay. Yeah, I just listened to your podcast about it. Yes. So you were together. You got together with your ex. Yes. And you had your girl. And so tell me a little bit about that. So, because I know in an episode of yours, he was a significant event in your life that happened. Yes. Kind of like a hurdle that you had to face to be where you're at right now, and to meet your now husband, and to have the family that you have right now. So, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my senior year of college, I happened to meet a man who, to me at the time, was like, oh my gosh, this is my Prince Charming. This is everything I've always wanted. I had like made a list at some point of all the qualities I wanted in a person, and to me, he fits the ideal person I wanted to be with. Of course, we were still in college at the time. We were 21, 22. So we had a lot of life to figure out. But again, in my mind was like, this is it. This is the end of the journey for me. I've met my match. And so we dated for, 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. Ended up living together after college, and then became pregnant with my daughter. And that was very traumatic in some ways, because we weren't married. We're down here in the South. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, going things out of order. My family, of course, was not very pleased with that result. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I stuck with it, and I was still very keen on this is the relationship that's going to be for me, and it's going to work. And as time was going on in that relationship, because we were young, because of other factors that now I look back on is, you know, mental immaturity, maybe a little mental illness in there, things of that sort. It just started to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And it fell apart in a really, really big way. By the time my daughter was one, I just started to feel like I was with a different person. He just mm-hmm. felt different to me. His energy was different. And I started to say to him, who are you? Like, I don't know who this person is. He was just cockier, and his whole attitude had just really become something I didn't like. And he started traveling for work at the time. The work became where he was gone on weekends, and he is in marketing, and I know that was part of the deal, but it just became ridiculous to me. Mm-hmm. And I started to just have these visions of him with other women. And I really thought, Monica, I was going crazy. And so I ended up going to a therapist because I thought, what is wrong with me? Like, mm-hmm. I need to talk this out with somebody. And I remember the first initial conversation I had with her on the phone was, because she wanted to know, you know, what generally do you want therapy for? And I said, I really need to understand what's going on in my relationship. I feel like I want to leave, but I don't really have proof. And I just really need to talk this out with somebody. Mm-hmm. And so started going to therapy to kind of talk that out week after week. And what had turned out was, he was living a double life with another woman. When we would drop him off at the airport, I believe he either drove to his apartment in Dallas, because we were kind of in the suburbs of Dallas, mm-hmm. and would go live there. Sometimes he'd fly to California to go see her, and they were engaged, and it was even bigger and way worse than what I had thought it would be. But that whole experience allowed me to see, to trust my intuition, to trust myself. My whole life, in essence, change. I had this whole persona of perfection in a lot of ways of like, oh, look at Lindsay. She's got this great family she's building. Sure, she didn't get married right out of the gate, but you know, everything was going my way. And then the perfection was completely gone. Mm-hmm. And in a really kind of humiliating way in some ways. Yeah, it was just very eye-opening. And from there, it was like, okay, well, if that's not going to work out, then I'm going to get exactly what I want. And a part of me, too, was like, I'm going to make this the best experience that ever happened to me, because I was so mad, too, at him. And I thought, I'm going to prove that this is going – that you're not going to screw me over kind of thing. You know, it was like – So yeah, so then I just started to really rebuild my life in a way that I now have, which I'm so grateful for. But at the time, man, it was hard.
Oh yeah, I mean, to find out that your husband, well, I keep saying husband because that's
well,
like
it was
what,
like common law. Married,
yeah, common law.
Yeah.
To find out that the man that you were with is living this whole double life, I mean, and then I know that we haven't talked about this, but I know that your therapist didn't pretty much added more to the fire and really didn't help the situation and made you feel even more insecure and made you feel more like you were losing your mind. But I think that all of your feelings were so validated, even if they weren't true, you know, even if they, it did, if even if he wasn't cheating or he wasn't doing this, still, like, you were having this serious thought, this serious insecurity, or it wasn't even insecurity because you found out this was true, and trying to balance that. And then I think a lot of us at, you know, in that age range that you were, we have this timeline. Any woman who says doesn't have a timeline is lying. We have this timeline of like, I'm going to go to school and I'm going to go get married and I'm going to have kids. And then I want to have, you know, have kids by this age or this. And we all have that magical timeline that doesn't fit everybody. But yeah, he kind of ruined that for you. I mean, he ruined the fact that you wanted this, you know, or you were portraying this perfect family. He ruined that perfect picture. I know that you you mentioned in your podcast episode, and I'm going to put it in the show notes, that it was very important for you to have these like really, really nice photos and kind of this portrayal of, you know, a perfect family, even though there were things that were happening that may not really be what was, you know, what was going on in that photo.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that that's just like a lot of women don't trust their intuition. And I'm so glad that you did. I'm so glad that you didn't let your therapist kind of undermine what you were, you know, what you truly felt was true. And I mean, he just really, so you mentioned in the beginning that he was Prince Charming, and then eventually mm-hmm. things started changing. How was he then? And then once you found out, you know, that he was changing, what was that? Like, how was he back then before you started seeing some of these changes?
That's a good question, Monica, because I think a lot of women need to hear this kind of stuff is, mm-hmm. so when we first started dating, you know, it was total like being sucked off my feet, the flowers, the gifts, the reservations everywhere. And we're going to do all these amazing things in our life and all these love letters and these notes, and we're going to fly away and do these, you know, incredible, wonderful things together. Mm-hmm. And he was at a place in life too, where, you know, I was a senior in college. I was a very go-getter kind of woman. Mm-hmm. I was ready to move on with my life. And he was kind of piddling around to a point mm-hmm. where he had an extra year of college. And I was like, dude, I'm not going to sit around and wait for you. Like, you've got to pick up the pace and meet me. And he did. And so again, it was like, okay, we're on the same page. And then we both kind of got these awesome jobs and, you know, we're building this life. And then it just became little by little, this these little seeds of like, I hate how you work so much. I hate how you talk about work. I hate how you do this and do that. And then it became like little snide remarks about my looks here and there, to a point where it's just like joking, but then it starts to feed into you, right?
Right.
But the biggest change was really just he became obsessed with this external world of like getting these watches and getting these things and status and how he looked. And I was like, who cares? I mean, I don't understand why this is such a big deal to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it really just became like, who is this for? And he would come home and like bring me these designer handbags for these presents. And I was like, I don't even like this stuff. Like, what is this about? And as time went on, you know, it got to a point where I was going to a therapist, he was going to a therapist, and he came back one day and he said, yeah, my therapist mentioned to me the term narcissism and how I might be a narcissist. And I laughed, Monica. And granted, I had a degree in psychology. Okay, I should know better than this stuff. But to me, I just laughed it off because there was a part of my brain that was just so numb mm-hmm. to what was going on that I was just like, oh, yeah, of course you're into yourself. And then later, when everything came out, you know, it was like that term came back and I just started researching it again and looking it up again. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Like, and I just started reading all these books about it and looking it up. And I mean, the self-awareness I gained out of that was like so eye-opening. And they say that's very common with narcissists is like, you're in it. And then once you're out of it, like you see the wolf for who it is, right? And that's when it was just like it slapped me in the face.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it might have been that you were honing on to who he was. And you know, and I think that your intuition was telling you, no, Lindsay, this is not the person that you met from the beginning. Like this is a complete, totally different person, and he's just not right for you. And you know, that little voice in our head that tells us, like, that warns us, you know, that warns us about these types of people, these toxic people. And sometimes they can't help it if they do have, you know, a diagnosis like a narcissistic personality disorder. But, I think that I love that how you speak about him in a way that it was so past tense. Like, I can see that you've done the growth and you've done the work to process this, because I think it's so important coming into this podcast and having processed all of this. And the fact that at the same time there was a kid involved. I mean, you had your little girl. Did she catch on, like, not seeing her dad a lot? And
It was tricky because by the time she was a year, he's just started those quote work trips, unquote, whatever. Mm-hmm. I was saying, because I never know what was work and what wasn't work. But, and so he was gone a lot, Monica. I mean, mm-hmm. he was in and out, in and out, in and out. And to a point where I was really the one that was still kind of trying to keep that connection going. Like, when he was gone, I'd be like, hey, you need to call us. Like, we want to talk to you. Like, we didn't have FaceTime at the time, but it was like, you need to be calling us every day. Why aren't you calling us? Why aren't you talking to us? And I was kind of pushing that, and he would record videos to send us and all this stuff. So by the time he had some custody with her, you know, it was very kind of foreign to both of us, and or all three of us, I guess. And, you know, my biggest thing going through that whole process was I was so scared she was going to be messed up from this whole experience. And I was so scared of, like, who this person was, and he was with this woman I didn't know about, and all this stuff. And so that was really, again, my biggest passion for wanting to change and be the strongest mother that I knew I could be, because I knew that she needed it. Because I couldn't control him. I couldn't control that situation mm-hmm. in many ways. I mean, of course I can control her safety out over there, but of not course. Really the mental impact. So yeah, it was just, it became about her and what I could get for her. And that's kind of what I got from the divorce of, being home with her as much as possible for the next few years to make the transition as easy as possible. And luckily, yeah, he did some crappy things. Yeah, he continues to do crappy things. We all do, right? But he really stepped up to the plate there, met me in the middle and was like, okay, let's make this work and make this happen. Otherwise it could have been a very, very nasty, nasty divorce.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that it was a good, I mean, that it went fast and that you were able to get something in return as far as being able to spend time with your daughter, to where you guys can bond and continue moving forward, you know, after this all happened. I'm curious, did you have any, like, before you found out that he had another woman, did you hear anything from friends or family, like, kind of like red flags that they had mentioned about him or anything like that?
Well, it was really just about, why was he gone so much, especially mm-hmm. over weekends? Why wasn't he calling us? You know, my friends would say, you know, even when my husband traveled with Lindsay or whatever, you know, we talk, or we're constantly in texting one another. And I am naturally a very independent person. Mm-hmm. I don't really necessarily need that per se, but it was starting to be like, why is this so weird? My mom, of course, had many red flags about the whole thing. And I was just at a point too where I did too, but I was turning to my therapist, who I was giving all the information to, all of my thoughts, all the things that were going on, versus a friend who would get a piece or a family member who would get a piece.
Right.
And she was telling me, everything's fine. A lot of this is in your head. And really talking me through that. And I thought, well, I trust her more than anybody else. She's, you know, a doctor and blah, 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 blah. And so again, it was just kind of like, well, if she thinks it's okay, then it must be okay.
Right. Right. And then, so whenever, I guess we can change the shift. So whenever you were doing therapy and you found out that, I don't know, were you still in therapy when you found out that he had another woman?
Yes.
And how was that conversation with your therapist when you pretty much told her, hey, I was right?
Yeah. So at that point, I had been going for 9 months, I think, religiously, like every week I would go. And to be honest with you, Monica, a lot of that was, I was really lonely because I was by myself. I was a stay-at-home mom and I just needed somebody to talk to. And, you know, I had had my own kind of, not necessarily red flags, but my own intuition being like, why are you doing this, Lindsay? Why are you going to a therapist every week? Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed talking to somebody about kind of deeper level stuff. But yeah, when it came out that he had had the civil life and all this, I just went to her and I said, and it wasn't, I wasn't mad at her or anything. It was more of, oh my gosh, everything has come true and it's been worse. And I remember like just processing my feelings with her and saying, you know, like almost screaming almost in the therapy room of, oh my God, I have a child with this person. Mm-hmm. And she sat there and you could tell she was trying to hold back tears. And I don't know if I was crying at that point or not. And I was just like, I don't even know what to do. I don't know what to do. And she had said to me, Lindsay, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. And I ended up still going to her, Monica, for many months after that, because again, I didn't want to lose that relationship because I felt like I had lost this other huge part of my life. And what happened then is I started dating again a few months later. And I had said to her again, I was like, this guy that I'm dating, I have this weird feeling about him. I just can't put it down. And, you know, she didn't really like go as far as she had had the first time with like, oh, you're catastrophizing. But it was more like, well, what makes you think this? And da 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 da. And started asking me more questions. And then it, almost I would like talk myself out of it. And she would talk me out of it. And then again, he was another guy who was cheating on me. Oh, and so I went back to her again the next time. And I was like, this guy was cheating on me too. And I knew it the whole time. And then she said, man, you must have a really good intuition. And I was like, I do. I do. And I remember leaving that therapy office and I thought, I'm done. Like, I don't need this anymore. It's not a relationship that serves me anymore. Yeah. But I feel like I know it comes out in a negative way, but I felt like I needed that relationship at the time for what it was, because I needed a relationship that taught me to trust myself.
Exactly. And I think that therapy can do that, even if it wasn't with the right therapist, or even if the, you know, because I think people think that we're going to say always the right thing, or that we're going to, we only get what we only get what you say, and we still have our own biases. And sometimes that's hard to not put into light. And sometimes our biases creep on without us knowing. And
yes,
maybe your therapist already had some type of bias towards men, towards the type of man you were dating, or whatever it was, and she was trying to help you the way she could help you. But right. I'm glad that she was able to give you that, hey, I can trust myself, I know what I want, and I know what is to be true, and I'm gonna follow and be true to myself and true to my what I want and the type of man that I want moving forward. So it sucks that you had to go through these types of relationships to know your worth and your value and the type of man that you deserve. And so I really do want to talk a little bit about so you met your hubby.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell me a little bit about that story.
Yeah. So, you know, after I kind of left therapy for good, you know, I was dating many different people at the time. And it was very casual dating. I was in eHarmony. So at least the people I was going out with, like, we had been matched in a certain way. And I found it to be really efficient and nice and all that stuff. But before I had met my husband, I had made a new list of the qualities that I wanted in a person. Mm-hmm. And I had found my old list, and I kind of laughed at it because it was very much from a young girl's perspective, like handsome, you know, like, oh, takes me out, you know. And now it was like, okay, it goes 28 or 29 at the time, and I had a very different list. And it's so funny because when we do those kinds of exercises, sometimes it seems silly, but then it allows our brain to get very clear on what it is that we want. And we can easily go out and find it because we know what we're looking for. And so I happened to find my husband. He would have been a guy I would have never really paid attention to back in the day. But it was a really awesome experience from the start of just really a lot of depth in our conversations. There was a friendship that was built out of that versus just like kind of being hot and heavy. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, it was really, again, I talk about how coaching was a thing that I never knew existed. It was like he was a person that I had always envisioned, and I had always thought maybe I'm just asking for too much. And then there he was. And so, yeah, I mean, now we're approaching, I think, 6 years together.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Married for 3, I think. It's like going by so fast. So, yeah. And, you know, it's so funny because I wish I would have just stuck with my guns and stayed true to who I was. And two, had somebody that kind of mentored or coached me along the way to say, hey, you know, these kind of guys are really fun to date, Lindsay, but they're not really fun in relationships. Stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. And I could totally relate. I mean, when I moved, I moved from Laredo, Texas to Denton when I was doing my master's, and I had already been in a 3-year relationship. And he, the first couple of years, it was all drama. And I think I loved the drama. Honestly, I did love it because it was, I had my own drama going on with my own family. And so him having his own drama, I could pretty much put all my effort into him and pretty much not focus on what was happening in my life.
Yeah.
Focus on his life.
It was a great distraction.
Yes. And when we moved to Denton, we had already been together for 3 years, but the last year was just like the relationship was dead. I think that he just thought that he had to give me a promise ring. He had to move. I think he thought that I wanted all that. And for me, I'm like, no, I want to do this for me. And I want you to do this because you want it to, not because you think that that's what I want for you to do. But in the beginning, he would cheat on me. I mean, I found like a video of this girl naked and in his phone, gosh. And he denied it. He said it was from back when, and all of this, you know, all this, our intuition telling us. And I would be the type of girlfriend that I did not want to be. I would look at his text. I would question him. And then he would make me feel like, why are you questioning me? Like, you're invading my privacy type of thing, you know, turning things around. And then eventually, at the second year, he got better. Like, he was doing better in school. We were matching goals. And that's when we ended up wanting to move to Denton for my master's. For that one semester, I felt so lonely, Lindsay. He didn't want to make a life here. He really just said, oh, I'm just here for, you know, to finish school. And then that's it. I don't want to go out to make friends. And me, I was 2021, and I said, no, I want to make friends. Like, I'm in a new city. I've never been outside of Laredo. Like, I really want to make new friends. He did not want to. And I remember crying and just telling him, I can't do this anymore. And I felt so horrible. Like, I took time away from him. That's what I felt like. I took time away from him, but he also took time away from me. And I felt super horrible about saying, hey, we can't be together anymore and you need to go back home. And I told him, you don't have to go back home. Like, you can stay here. I can help you find, you know, roommate. And he was like, no, I need to go back home. But he made me seem like the villain in this whole story, with his parents and everything. And I think it's, you know, those types of relationships do shape you and help you, because after that, I was able to go back to therapy and find and really reflect back and what type of man I wanted. And I, at the same time, I needed to work on myself. I realized that I was just honing onto these relationships to distract myself from going through the tough times and the tough conversations with myself.
Yeah.
So I could totally relate in some sense.
Yeah. And I think so many women can relate to that in general. I mean, that's where, you know, I wish I would have had podcasts back in the day of, like the one you had the other day, Monica, of toxic people, of taking notes of like, okay, I don't know. Because sometimes, you know, a lot of that toxic behavior was modeled for me when I was growing up. And so I just thought that was normal. That's just what happens. You know, and two, in learning how to trust ourselves and honor ourselves and learn how to process our feelings in healthy ways. Because that was something I discovered too later, Monica, was like, I was using love as a way to help me feel better. You know, I could love on this little kitten or I could love on this man and not have to deal with my pain. And I was like, oh, I am addicted to this.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, it's hard to just love on yourself without any outside help, without having your husband, boyfriend, a friend say, oh, I love you. And you have to say, I love you to yourself. You have to be okay with who you are first of all, find out who you are, and you're still learning and you're still growing as you go. But yeah, I think that it's hard for people to be okay with themselves, and so they seek out outside validation. Mm-hmm. Because they haven't done the healing. So I do want to talk about coaching, because so when you were dating your husband, you told him you were going through coaching, right?
Mm-hmm. I did, yes.
And so, and then you told him, hey, I think I want to be a life coach. And what was his response? Because I know you mentioned this in your podcast.
Yeah. So he was super supportive, super excited. You know, when I met him, we always joke, we actually talked about this last night on our date night of, hi, I'm Lindsay. I don't have a job. I'm recently divorced. I have a 2-year-old. And it's like, I had no shame in my game about it, because that was one of the gifts that therapy gave me, was to kind of own myself. Mm-hmm. You know, even I had felt empowered that I had been almost stronger than my therapist, right? It was like, I know what I'm doing here. I'm not going to have shame in my game when mm-hmm. I go forward. So yeah, I told him, you know, I was going through coaching. He thought it was great. Then I was like, I think I'm going to be a life coach. He thought it was awesome. He had had some coaching in his professional life and he had found it really beneficial. And I'm really glad that I had that support, because I knew my family was going to freak out. I knew kind of the world was going to freak out too. I mean, I was freaking out, Monica. I was like, I thought I was going to be a therapist. That was always like my dream job and what I was going to do. And I knew coaching, you know, lacked credibility. I knew there was a stigma with it. And so that's where it was really important to me to go through, become certified in some sense, really, you know, do some neuroscience kind of work as well, because I wanted to have that credibility. And I knew it was going to be scary, but I was like, well, at least I've got one support system here.
Yeah. And that's all it takes. It's one person to believe in you so that you can move forward. And so what do you enjoy most about being a coach?
What I love about coaching is the action that comes with it of, okay, here's our problem and here's how we're going to fix it. And, I'm, you know, Monica, you and I have kind of met in a world where we talked about strengths, mm-hmm. and I know we might get that to that yes. later, but I'm somebody who really likes action. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the things that I really loved about it. I loved a process. I loved a step-by-step, we're going to do this and do this. And that was one of the things in therapy that I wish I had in that experience was, okay, here's your problem. Well, here are some steps to fix it, versus just me kind of going every week and just using her in essence as like my sounding board. I mm-hmm. wanted something different, but I didn't know how to ask for that. I didn't know what else was out there. That's all I knew. And so I just found it really invigorating. And I love that about coaching, is that we're constantly kind of moving forward. There are times that we have to kind of pause and process, of course, but there's still an action with that of like, okay, what is it you want to solve? Okay, let's figure out how to solve that problem. Does that make sense?
Yes, I love that. It's super action oriented and moving and forward focused, because I really do like that. Sometimes in therapy, and we've talked about this, is, you know, in therapy, sometimes we are a little bit talking about the past and how these past behaviors have are still hindering us moving forward. And I have another podcast that I did with another life coach, and we talk about that we had a client who was doing coaching and therapy at the same time. And it was so beneficial because she hadn't processed some of these past things that were going on. And so with her coach was getting frustrated because there were some deep-rooted things that were just not being addressed. And so once she started having some sessions with the therapist, and then she started having coaching sessions, it was so empowering for her. And she was just able to move forward and do still work on her on past things that were going on, mm-hmm. that were still coming at the surface, and still being able to be action oriented in her business and whatever else that this person wanted to do. And I just think that it's awesome that you meet a need to a woman who really just wants to be action, action, action. Because I think sometimes I've met some other life coaches that are a lot about reflecting, but they don't do the action part of it. Like, let me just reflect. Okay, that helps. I know what I have to do, but tell me what I'm going to do next. Like, what is mm-hmm. it? What are some of the tangible steps that I can do to not feel like I did something, that I'm moving forward, that I'm making change happen? So I love that. Is there any situations, or what's the hardest thing about being a coach?
I think the hardest thing for me, Monica, has been you constantly having to work on my own mindset about things. Because being a business owner, and especially being a coach, it's very personal. You're putting yourself out there in a very personal way. And then too, whatever you believe, you kind of create. And a lot of the beliefs I had about coaching, despite loving it, despite knowing I wanted to do this, that I was born to do this kind of feeling, it was very much like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe you're doing this, Lindsay. Oh my gosh, you should have just gone and been a therapist. Ah, la, 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 right? And so I had to work through a ton of that, of not only what I believed about coaching, but what I believed about myself and, putting myself out there and getting rejected and being okay with that. So now I'm finally kind of at a place where I feel really good about that stuff, but it's been 5 years to get here. And constant, constant, constant work on my end.
I like that you mentioned that it's taken 5 years, because any entrepreneur or even a starting entrepreneur, they just like, I don't, because they see social media and they see like, oh, look at Lindsay, like she's so successful. But they don't see all the things that you had to deal with and work on yourself to get to where you're at, you know. And you're still working, you still want to level up your business, you still have those moments where I'm sure you do, where you're like, what can I do, or what can I do better, or you still question or have self-doubt. Like, self-doubt is not going to leave. I think people seek permanent feelings. Like, I permanently want to feel happy. The thing is, you can't permanently feel happy, or I permanently want to have no self-doubt. It's like, no, you're going to have self-doubt. It's being able to work through that moment that you have that self-doubt, that you have that I'm not happy. Figure out what makes you happy. Do the things that make you happy, that bring that feeling into the surface. But that feeling cannot stay 100% of the time, because hey, life happens every day. There's something goes wrong. And we just have to be okay with it and own those feelings and be okay with some of the negative feelings that people don't like to feel, like sadness, anxiety and all that. Sometimes you just have to let the feeling, feel your feeling, and then move on. So we met at one of your workshops. Are you going to continue doing some of those workshops? And
Yes, so I have one booked for San Antonio later this year, and I'm looking to book two more sometime later this year. That's kind of my goal, is to have four this year.
okay, so let's talk a little bit about what kind of workshops you do.
Yes, so I have a workshop called a Strength Soiree. So the one that Monica attended was in Dallas a few months ago, and that was actually my first one. And I had always had this vision of doing these workshops with women. One time I went to a calligraphy workshop, and I sat there, and it was just very well done in regards to the decorations, and I got to learn this cool skill. And I thought, I want to do this with the StrengthsFinder assessment. Now they call it Clifton Strengths, which is so confusing. I hate it when people change their names. But yeah, so I thought, I want to do this. And it just kind of went on the back burner. And then I ended up meeting Amanda, who is a mutual contact between me and Monica. She runs a group called the Dallas Girl Gang. And I was talking to her, and I was like, I'm this coach, and I would love to do something with you. And I have this event. And so we made it happen. So in that event, people bring their assessment results. So they get their top five strengths, and these are natural talents that are within you that you have to kind of learn how to process them. You have to learn how to use them in a way to make them really strong within you. Because a lot of times our natural strengths are in overdrive. So for example, if somebody has high empathy, a lot of times they're walking around like a sponge all day long, soaking up emotions. And so, they're constantly kind of an overdrive of soaking all this up, and they don't know how to process it and all that stuff. So they can learn kind of step by step, A, you have this about you. Here's some ways to kind of handle it, one of which may be therapy or coaching, right? But this is a way to kind of move forward with it. And so in those workshops, they're just kind of learning the basics about their strengths. And then hopefully my goal is always for them to leave with a passion of, oh my gosh, I didn't know this about me. And now I have some tangible steps on how to make it even better.
Yeah, I love that. I honestly took a lot from that workshop. I love it. I have the little calligraphy. It's like a little card that you gave us, and it reminds me everything that I have strengths, you know, and I just need to use them. to do better and be better and continue moving forward with my business. So how can somebody, so after they attend a workshop, how can they, work with you? Like what type of coaching do you do? And how can they work with you and maybe online programs that you may have?
Yeah. So I have the Strengths Soirees, which is just focused on the Clifton StrengthsFinder assessment. And then I also have an online course called Solidify Your Strengths, which is, it goes deep dive into all the 34 strengths. It's an hour training on each one. And you can go in and learn even more about each strength. So it talks about like what it looks like in a child. What are the things that will show up in a career with a strength? What about in relationships? What does it look like when it's in overdrive? What does it look like when it's in a sweet spot? And so they start to learn, you know, the depth of each strength, because if you don't have awareness, you can't really change anything, right? So
nope.
They learn about that. And then I also offer in my kind of strengths bucket a one-on-one 90-minute call where I teach somebody how their strengths work together. And that's called a one-on-one strength sesh. And in that, I always say the analogy, it's like a cake. It's like our strengths, you know, we have like our eggs and our butter and our sugar, whatever. We have all these separate strengths. Well, we need to learn how they come together to make us. Mm-hmm. And so in that session, we talk about, okay, well, this strength likely feeds off this strength. And so sometimes when they come together, they can look like this, or this one's going to fight with this one. And this is what that looks like. And so too, you know, it's like, okay, with all these strengths together, this is what you're really good at. This is where your kind of secret sauce is in the world and all that stuff. So like for me, when my strengths came together and I started to learn not only how they were separately, but how they were together, it was, oh my gosh, like I of course have to be a coach. Coaching is such a better fit for me than therapy, because I naturally am wanting to move forward. Mm-hmm. I am naturally wanting to solve problems in a quick way. And that's probably why I was always drawn to therapy, but I was like, oh, there's just not a quite great fit there. Same with human resources. You know, you're always kind of drawn naturally to things in alignment with your strengths. And it's just to when you kind of put them all together, does it again kind of slap you in the face of, wow, oh, this is so cool. And then too, especially if you're a business owner, you know how to build a business around your strengths, which is very powerful, because there's so many kind of online systems out there or business coaches that's like, follow my step-by-step system and make $1 million. It's like, well, that was your strengths.
Yep.
That's what works for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's my kind of strengths bucket, my strengths world. The bigger programs that I do are, it's a kind of a 7-month process, and it starts out with a 21-day Life Lovers Challenge. And in that one, you're just learning the tools for lifelong success. So we're learning about the brain a little bit, how to program our brain for happiness, because our brain isn't naturally going to be happy. It's just going to be mm-hmm. wired for survival of seeing threats and fears in our world. So we have to kind of go in and figure out a way to get what we want from our brain, which sounds so weird, but it's true. And so we go through that process for 21 days. I always say it's kind of the appetizer, the warm-up lap, and then we go into some deeper work. And this is where the coaching therapy world kind of combines a little bit. And this mm-hmm. is, I got this process from my coaching school. My, I don't know, even going to call it my leader. That sounds weird. But the lady who started this process, she used to be a psychologist, and she loved psychology and in that role, but she really started, this was the 80s or 90s when coaching really started to gain a little bit of traction. Uh-huh. And she started to take what she was doing in therapy, but put it in a coaching process. And so there are a few weeks in that next process called Become an Unstoppable Woman, where we go look at the past of, okay, what are your top 10 shaping moments? Mm-hmm. What were the beliefs you took out of there? What's that negative voice telling you in your head based off those beliefs? And then from there, after that, we spend, you know, 2 or 3 weeks there. And then we move forward of, okay, let's figure out a way that we can change this. And we do some healing work with that and kind of release those beliefs and then reprogram our minds for other stuff. So that's it in a nutshell.
Oh. Woo, you got that. No, I love that. I love that. I know that you know your stuff. And I just wanted to mention something that had written in your bio that it says that Lindsay is the true testimony of resiliency and perseverance. And I 100% believe that. I think today you gave us part of your story, and then I got to see also everything that you're doing to help women be successful in whatever they want to do, and I love that. But I know that there are sometimes those tough roads, Lindsay, And I want to know, how do you stay focused on moving forward and making progress, especially when sometimes we have all these, you know, negative outside sources coming in?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Yeah, so I really go back to the coaching process that I use constantly, Monica, constantly, of, you know, just recently, it was sometime when the whole Kavanaugh case was going on recently, I just felt really triggered by it all. I've never been sexually abused or anything of that sort. But for whatever reason, between that and being pregnant and feeling some these beliefs and biases about men and all this weird stuff was coming up, I was like, I've got to go and figure out what are these beliefs going on in my head, and I need to heal some of this stuff. And so I went back to my coaching process and I did that. And one of the big things that I work on with my clients is journaling. And I teach them how journaling can be really their own coach. Eventually, you can start to see your thoughts and your feelings on paper, and then to how to process that and how to shift that and heal it and all that sort. So, you know, I pulled out my journal and I used that kind of stuff. So anytime too, when I'm triggered, in my own world, like I talked about recently on an Instagram story, I've had recently some people who were just like a no call, no show for a discovery call. Don't even like reply to the emails after the fact. And it's like, what in the world? Like, how do you go around and treat people like this?
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. And I thought, okay, I am obviously triggered by this. Why is that? And so I had to go and I had to figure out what that was. And that's where I talked about earlier. You're constantly working on your mindset. You're constantly looking at things because if you don't, it comes out in your work. And I've seen it come out in my work. There was one period of time where I was very doubting of things. And I started attracting a lot of those people into my practice of people who were too doubting. And I thought, whoa, this is so weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's constantly going back, looking at my thoughts, my patterns, and figuring out how can I shift out of this.
I love that. I love that. So many people need to continue to do that because I think it's so crazy, Lindsay, but people want, because there's always this 10 steps on how to do this or 20 steps on how to do that, you know, and it's like, you got to continue doing these steps over and over. Exactly. You don't just have to do it that one time and then you'll get no. Sometimes you have to redo those steps. You have to go back to what worked for you, or maybe that doesn't work for you. You got to do something different. So I love that's how you stay focused, by going back to your coaching steps. So I love that. My final question for you, Lindsay, and it's something that I've been starting to ask all of my interviewees, is what is one thing that you wish people would just talk about more that isn't talked about?
I think for sure it's about money. And I think that's because I'm in a phase now where I do feel like I've created the life that I wanted to create, especially, you know, I'm about to be 35, which for some reason feels like a monumental birthday because it's like, oh my gosh, mid 30s, what the world? And I think about 24, 25 year old Lindsay, who was about to get pregnant with my daughter. And I was really at a place where I was like, okay, I've done a little bit of this whole work thing and HR kind of fit and the dance studio kind of fit, but what's like my it? What's my thing? And this is a life I want to have. And all that. And I've created that in the past 10 years. And it's really hit me recently of, oh my gosh, how did I do this? How did I create this? Oh my gosh, I don't even know. So now it's like, what am I going to create in the next 10 years? Because whatever, you know, I kind of sit and think about, it kind of just comes true, because I'm a big believer that the universe, God, whatever you want to believe, kind of brings that stuff to you. Like coaching, for example, was like, I would have never done that ever in a million years until somebody has suggested it to me. And that was really what was a big game changer for me, right? So, yeah. So I wish people were talking about money, because this is something I'm working on, about investing. My husband happens to be a wealth manager, and so he's in the money world all the time, and he gets to see kind of behind the scenes of people's lives, on mostly people who are successful, right? But yeah, like how they made their money, how they're investing in their money, how they're spending their money, because I think a lot of it too, you know, from the surface, what we see on Instagram or whatever, or even our neighbors, is like, well, they're doing well, or they're living the life. But then when you pull back the curtain, you realize it's all a show, versus people who you think maybe are not doing so well based off the way they're dressing, or maybe the car they drive or the house or whatever. And they're actually doing very well, you know, investment wise, I guess, or wealth wise financially. And so I just would love for people to talk about that more.
Lindsay, thank you really so much for telling me your story, telling me a little bit about what you do. I was so excited to have you on this podcast, and I can't wait to see what you have going on. So where can people find you?
So my biggest platform that I'm on is Instagram. And so it's Lindsay, LINDSAY, E. Preston there. And then my website's the same. It's just lindsayepreston.com. Those are my best two places to find me. And thank you so much for having me, Monica. This was so much fun.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Cafe with Monica. This was made for you. So be sure to visit cafewithmonica.com to access the show notes, where I write tips and additional resources for this episode in a location convenient for you. And if you love this episode and found value and can't wait to hear more, go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. It would mean the world to me. I can't wait for you to listen to the next episode. So see you guys next time.